Welcome, everybody. I will call the Senate Committee on Rules to order. We have a matter of some urgency since I just found out today that the Ways and Means Committee is closing down for good on Friday. That's what we're told. And this bill that we have in front of us needs to go to Ways and Means, so it's important to act timely. So we will start with a work session by opening a work session on Senate Bill 1544. And we had a hearing on this earlier in the session, but the Dash 18 amendment has made substantial changes. So Josh, you want to just highlight the changes, and then Senator Prezanski is going to say a few words.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The Dash 18 amendment is posted on OLIS. It creates the Illegal Marijuana Market Enforcement Grant Program to provide financial assistance to local governments. It temporarily modifies the use of funds in the Oregon marijuana account and suspends a related fee, sunsetting all of those changes in 2024. Increases the maximum number of cardholders for whom a person may produce marijuana from 4 to 8. Exempts small-scale medical marijuana grows from the tracking system. Directs the Oregon Health Authority to adopt rules establishing the maximum number of immature marijuana plants under 24 inches that may be produced at a medical marijuana grow site. Authorizes licensed commercial producers to provide immature plants to medical marijuana producers, cardholders, or caregivers. Exempts licensed processors from labeling and packaging requirements applicable to cannabinoid products that are produced for a cardholder or caregiver from marijuana provided by the cardholder or caregiver. Requires industrial hemp products to carry a label indicating whether they are derived from hemp or marijuana and be sold in a licensed retail establishment. Finally, the amendment extends the period of time within which the Cannabis Commission must submit a report and request legislation, modifies the manner in which a medical grow site address is identified, prohibits considering certain registered grow sites as commercial grow sites, and authorizes local governments to disclose the receipt of marijuana-related revenue. Madam Chair, members of the committee, we do not have the paperwork on the Dash 18.
Okay. Senator Prezanski, if you could come to the podium and be joined by Stephen Watson and Rob Bovet.
While they're doing that, quick question, Madam Counselor.
Yes.
Josh, you said the 16, which has been posted, that most people have seen, is very similar, just a few minor technical changes to the 16 and the 18. Correct? That's what you told the two senators.
Madam Chair, Senator Boquist, I did a very quick side-by-side, and they look substantially similar. It looks like there's a tweak or two.
Okay, thank you.
So the paperwork, which we are suspending today, would be virtually the same, if not the same.
I'm sure. I'm only so that the public knows, if they're looking at the 16, that it is, other than technical changes, that's the only difference.
Okay.
I don't care.
All right, Senator Prezanski.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members. Thank you for allowing myself and the others in this panel to address you regarding SB 1544 and specifically the Dash 18s. First of all, my disclaimer, I have not seen the Dash 18s because I was in committee before they came out, but I've had my lifelines, who are two of them are next to me, assure me that they basically are the Dash 16s with a few minor tweaks. The one that I wanted to call out is because there is an issue regarding the difference between marijuana and industrial hemp. One of the concerns that we have had through our process is that what if someone is growing industrial hemp for human consumption for CBDs, which is a medical cannabinoid that's used by many individuals that are using cannabis for health reasons, if their concentration goes above what is allowed, permitted for industrial hemp, what happens next? And basically, we have all agreed that they should, if the concentrates become higher to the point of where they're showing a THC level that's greater than what is identified as industrial hemp, that they would be regulated as the same as marijuana would be if it's intended for human consumption and is going to be sold retail for individuals. With that understanding, there is some concern, and Mr. Bovet will be going through the changes. We wanted to ensure that if there was a declaration that some industrial hemp through this processing did in fact go over and above what the cutoff line is, that in no way would impact the field, the farm where it was actually grown, that somehow it would be interpreted by whoever that, oh, now that's a marijuana farm because it had this high level of concentration. What we don't want to see is someone trying to backdoor the regulation on land use for the growers and the farmers, that there's somehow their land is now going to be demarcate it something that it isn't. What we're trying to do through these fixes is ensure that if this is going to be a product that's going to be used for individuals for consumption for medical reasons or other purposes, that it does not have an unintended consequence or adverse impact on the land where it was grown.
Mr. Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, I'm sure there's a simple answer to this, but how do you deal with the situation where a farmer starts out growing a field of hemp, fully intending to sell it into the fiber market, but somewhere along the lines decides to sell a small part of it to a lab for production of CBDs?
There is nothing that would be, Madam Chair and Senator Beyer, I don't believe there would be anything that would prohibit them from actually doing that transaction. It's just that when that transaction that's going in for use for medical purposes or not, let's say, for fiber, it will go under the same regulations and restrictions that if someone was intentionally growing industrial hemp for the purpose of making CBDs.
But how does it get into the regulated system, the seed to sale?
Senator, basically that happens when...
Your name on,
sorry.
Please.
Sorry. For the record, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Rob Bovet, Legal Counsel, Association of Oregon Counties. So we previously in, was it last session or the session before, in one of your bills you allowed industrial hemp folks to sell essentially CBDs into the OLCC system through processors, and so that's how it gets entered into the seed-to-sale tracking on the CBD side.
Okay.
We've got other provisions here I'll talk about later that relate to high THC products.
But, cool.
But essentially, the senator's correct. They could essentially carve up their crop, and some of it goes to make rope, some of it goes to make CBD.
Oh, I'm good.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So when they're growing industrial hemp, are they testing it for the amount of THC all along? Is that part of the hemp production requirements?
Madam Chair, Senator Roblin, indeed. So we have a statute and administrative rules that require testing of hemp products. If they are intended for human consumption, even topicals, they have to be tested in the same manner as marijuana products, and all of them have to be tested for THC.
Regardless. If it was for fiber. Okay.
Yes.
Great. Are you through, Senator Pruszynski?
Yes. I'll turn it over to the two lifelines. One thing I do want to say on the record before we get too far, as always, my gratitude to Rob for all of the hard work he does as the chair, and Senator Beyer knows he has been able and a stellar participant in this process and assisting us to make certain we get the language that we need to take care of all of the issues. And I know that he's been working closely with Josh Nasby, and to some point with Whitney Perez on this issue, since we have had multiple different contact points. And also Stephen has been a new addition to the team, helping us make certain that we get all of our issues on into the various amendments. And I stand here in support, even though I have not read each and every word on the 18s, knowing what they represent through the 16s, that it's a good product to move forward.
Thank you. And the Stephen you referred to is Stephen Watson, who is on the panel, who's my legislative aide and has done a great job of keeping everybody together, keeping the amendments going, the paperwork going. This is the Dash 18, after all. So, Rob, why don't you pick up there?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'll just walk you through the 18s real quickly, let you know where they came from, the pieces of it. You've heard all of this stuff before. And then I'll point out the three particular areas where the 18s differ from the 16s and why we had to do those technical corrections. Although I agree with Senator Boquist earlier, there shouldn't be any different fiscal or revenue. It's just making these provisions actually work as intended.
And speed is of the essence.
Yes.
Speed is of the essence. Yes. You're talking too much.
I'm talking too much. Section 1, unchanged from 11s and 16s. Section 2 is the new dash 3s and 4s. Same as the 16s. Section 3, 4, 5, and on is a replacement for the dash 11s, largely the same as the dash 16s, with the exception of Section 7, where if we had adopted Section 7 in the 16s, it would have essentially moved all medical marijuana grow sites, including those with up to 96 plants, out of the seed-to-sale tracking system, which is probably not what we intended to do. So we fixed that in the 18s. Section 7A and other sections relate to the grant program. Section 8 is the replacement for the dash 7s that clarify that just because we've moved a medical marijuana grow site into tracking doesn't mean that it's commercial for purposes of state law, that clarification. Cannabis Commission in Section 9 and the deadlines for their report have been extended. They're unchanged from the 16s. Proximity to schools, our sixth effort to fix this problem of 500 to 1,000 feet. We did some minor tweaks to the language to make it work. Hopefully the sixth time is a charm, and we won't come back for any more changes. Section 13 through forward are the same as the 16s. That's the grant program. Industrial hemp products and commodities in Section 18 through 21. We did make some changes to Section 20 of these provisions from the 16s because, as the Senator pointed out, when we first saw Section 20, it would have not just applied to retail sales of high THC industrial hemp products, but going back to all of those other transfers among and between growers and processors, which is not what we intended to cover here, which would complicate matters. So we cleaned up Section 20 to make it applicable to just what we need to target here, which is the retail sale of high THC hemp products to ultimate consumers. So that's pretty much it. We didn't change any of the operative date language from the 16s, and that's my, I guess, two-minute summary of what you have in front of you in terms of the 18s.
Okay, and could you just go into a little bit, you or Stephen, on the enforcement piece on this through the Criminal Justice Commission?
The grant, here, I'll summarize it in maybe 2 minutes or less. So as the chair knows and Senator Beyer knows, for the last few years, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission has been, and I don't mean this in a bad way, skimming $1.25 million per quarter off the top of state marijuana tax revenues. And that amounts to $5 million a year, $10 million for a biennium. And that was to enable them to ramp up their operations, to do operational stuff, investigations, enforcement, because they didn't have any money. So that's their source of funds for that. But now they have money coming in because they are charging license fees. So a portion of that can be offset right now, and we can just offset it, or we can repurpose it. So 30% of that $1.25 million per quarter, or $5 million per year, 30% of that is available now and will be essentially taken, and which amounts to $1.5 million per year, taken and given to the Criminal Justice Commission to grant out to rural communities that are high production, high diversion, and low law enforcement, based on the Colorado model. Colorado passed a bill last year that did exactly this for the same reason, the massive diversion, and targeted rural communities with little law enforcement and high diversion. But Colorado's giving $6 million a year. I would love to have $6 million a year. This is $1.5 million. It's a start. It's a start, and so I actually will have something to tell United States Attorney Billy Williams that we are actually doing something about the true black market operators in Southern Oregon.
Stephen, sure. Could you... go ahead.
Let's follow up on that. Again, explain how that works. How will that money be used?
So, Senator Beyer, the money will be directed to the Criminal Justice Commission, who are really adept at granting out monies. And we've given them criteria based on the Colorado statute that basically says this is only $1.5 million. So it's a competitive grant application. Multiple counties can actually submit a single application and probably will, because $1.5 million is not a whole lot. And they are to prioritize areas of the state that are rural, that are high production and diversion counties, and that lack adequate law enforcement resources. In other words, I'm describing Southern Oregon in many ways. But it could also affect other areas of the state as well. Lane County, for example, even Clackamas County in certain parts might apply for some of these grant monies.
So does that mean in those areas the money would be used to beef up law enforcement?
Senator Beyer, yes, it would be used for law enforcement and deputy district attorneys. If that was the whole, if you didn't have a prosecutor, then you could use it for that as well. But law enforcement, investigation, and prosecution.
Or for marijuana.
Or for marijuana diversion.
Follow up,
please.
I guess this is one way to get at that. I'm wondering, and I don't know, maybe it's in another place. There were some early discussions about allocating some additional OSP officers to OLCC to implement their enforcement program. Is that going to happen someplace?
Yeah, Senator Burdick and Senator Beyer, that's already in process. I think we're going to see, if I talk to my state police friends, I could be wrong, but I think ultimately there'll be four additional state trooper folk working on task force issues in Southern Oregon targeting that specific issue. So that's a piece of the puzzle as well. But those folks need help from local law enforcement, and this grant program will give them those resources.
Well, just if I may, just to express a concern about that. I'm not going to second guess them, but it strikes me that in order for the seed to sale and all of that to really work well, there needs to be a fairly consistent threat of having audits done randomly, because there's no way they can audit everything. But I think a consistent threat of that to do that, and I hope that this gets us toward that.
And Senator Burdick and Senator Beyer, indeed, that this is a piece of it, but OLCC is also ramping up the number of investigators they have. Because a part of the diversion problem certainly comes out of our regulated market, but I think everybody agrees a large part of it comes from pure black market operators, and OLCC folk can't address those.
And those are also competing with our legal market. And right. They're depressing prices and everything else. Senator Winters.
Yes, Madam Chair, just to follow up, and I'm chairing Public Safety, Ways and Means, and we're just as concerned about this issue in Southern Oregon. And as you know, that we've been trying to beef up the state police and others. In fact, I actually ended up giving this past session an additional judge to Josephine County. It is an issue, and I'm glad that it's coming this way. I would just hope that it was a few more dollars, to be quite honest with you.
I just want to follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for the record, and I guess the subcommittee co-chair is to my right, and that is that the problem with these grant programs in the 12 years I've been following this is that they're one-time little targeted money that doesn't answer the Bureau of Police Planners and Training issue of trying to recruit and train and have a deputy. And then the second thing is the same problem is you know, as the good senator to your right will point out, you just going out and finding a prosecutor is not exactly easy either. So I hopefully the Criminal Justice Commission, who has adapted this, will look into this, because in these rural counties they don't have enough troopers or prosecutors now, and of course this isn't really full-time money, and so therefore just hiring a prosecutor for a year and then they disappear, or hiring a sheriff's deputy for 6 months, is a whole lot harder than us just sitting here at this podium talking about it.
Senator Kudansky.
Yep, Madam Chair and Senator Boquist, this is a starting point. We're in a short session, and this is what we are coming up with based on what we know that's there available in the sense of revenues there. And OLCC actually stepped up and actually offered this as a solution during the summit that we had in Portland in January. And okay. So I would expect that you're going to see this as being a line item in the future, and that it will be built in. And it'll give us a little bit more perspective and time during the interim to actually work up a broader plan of how we want to. This is kind of this, let's get started, let's get moving, and then we'll start figuring out where we think is going to be the most need and the basis for addressing those needs. And I think, as Mr. Ouellette has stated, it's not a one size fits all as to each county. You need to figure out what is in this mix. And I hope that they do, in fact, have a more of a regional grant application, because as we know, the county line doesn't stop this type of action. And so we need that coordination. And I expect that you're going to see ongoing, and just looking at, since we started 2 years behind Colorado and the state of Washington, we're learning as they have gone further down the road than we have, and this is one of the things we'll be picking up and moving forward.
I just put on the record, and I went against to the majority leaders here, is that I was in a meeting with federal authorities very recently, and another member here wasn't in that meeting. It was an opportunity, could have, because of other duties, but I just want to point out it has not been lost on federal authorities, federal law enforcement, and federal prosecutors, despite the public rhetoric and what we're doing right here, is that we put money in the front end of the state police budget last time and took it out of the back end. And that was specifically raised by two federal officials in a meeting I was in recently. So I remind my colleagues, when it comes out of Ways and Means, if we're putting money in the front and we're taking it out of the back this time, it's not going to help at all, because that very specific issue was raised by federal authorities in a meeting I was in within the last 2 weeks.
Just
Senator Beyer.
And I just wanted to add on that. I think when we started this program, we were very clear that the first claim on any money coming into the system was to make the system work and making sure that we had an enforcement mechanism before any money was delegated out under that. And I think I would ask our Ways and Means folks to keep that in mind. And that's, we need to make sure the system is strongly supported, but we need to make sure that it stays legal and we keep it working well.
Okay, it's been a good discussion. Stephen, do you want to just quickly describe who was involved in this collaborative effort that led to the 18 Amendment? Introduce yourself and tell us that.
Absolutely. For the record, Stephen Watson, Legislative Director to Senator Burdick, Chair Burdick, and members of the committee. I know the efforts related to this amendment began prior to session. The good senator from Lane County convened a work group and brought together a good deal of this policy in advance of that. Those participating members included Rob from AOC, as well as other advocates for the medical community, Anthony Taylor, Christine Phillips-Everett, and many others have joined the efforts since the beginning of session. There have been members participating from the Oregon Cannabis Business Council, members participating from the League of Oregon Cities, and I want to take a moment just to thank everybody for participating in the process. I think we have a terrific product, and thank you to everybody on the committee for being willing to meet in such short order to consider the amendment.
Thank you, and I want to particularly thank Senator Przanski for bringing this to our attention.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we should, we'd be remiss if we didn't acknowledge the agencies that also have been involved, OHA with their OMMP program, as well as OLCC and DOJ, who have been here pre-session and ongoing to make certain that we get the T's crossed and stop it.
Yes, it's very complicated, as we know, yes, from previous experience. We actually have a quorum of our joint committee right here in the room. Okay, so we are in work session, and Senator Winters, we have a bunch of motions here.
Chair Burdick, I move that the rules be suspended for the purposes of taking final action on Senate Bill 1544 without amendments being posted for 1 hour.
Senator Winters has moved that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking final action on Senate Bill 1544 without the amendment being posted for 1 hour. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Winters.
Chair Burdick, I move to adopt the -18 amendments to Senate Bill 1544 dated February 26, 2018.
Senator Winters has moved to adopt the -18 amendment to Senate Bill 1544 dated February 26, 2018. Is there any discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Winters.
Chair Burdick, I move the rules be suspended for the purposes of the final action on Senate Bill 1544 without the fiscal and revenue impact statements and with amendments being posted less than 1 hour before the hearing.
Senator Winters has moved that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking final action on Senate Bill 1544 without the fiscal and revenue impact statements and with amendment being posted less than 1 hour before the hearing. Is there any discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Winters.
Chair Burdick, I move Senate Bill 1544 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. And that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Last part is really important. Senator Winters has moved Senate Bill 1544 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there a discussion? Objection? So ordered. Thank you, committee, for coming on short notice, and we're done by 4:30. We are adjourned.
Yay.